You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny, very sunny, beautiful Cocoa, Florida today. We are on AM 1510. WWBC is our dial, our main dial. We're also on FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and 100.7. And we can be heard on the web as well, Miss Ellen,
at CetaMediaInc.com. And also on our Facebook page, which we get a lot of traction on from all the posts.
And WWBC. Yes. WWBC have their website as well. Mm-hmm. Ellen and I meet here every Monday with quality guests from all over the country, from people right here in Brevard County, Florida. People also call in on our show. Wonderful human beings who are trying to do great things for humanity so that people could actually enjoy their earthly journey called life. Today we have a great lineup. We have two guests in studio, and for our friends who are tuning in, you are going to have a wonderful time just listening to these awesome guests. Our first guest, our in-studio guest, is a former public defender. He's also a veteran. He's currently a criminal defense attorney, and his name is got one of the nicest names, Andrew Darling. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Andrew is a friend of mine, and I invited him on the show to come by and speak with us about why he's running to become the next sheriff in Orange County, Florida. So we're going to chat with him for a little bit, and then he'll have to go back to Orlando. I really appreciate you taking the time to come by and visit on set with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And Ellen, I'm going to let you introduce our other guest, because that name is a little bit, unless he wants to tell us his name. We also have Mr. Sebastian
Lajeunesse.
It sounds like lingerie. And very Sebastian nice. Is a good friend of my family, and he is here to speak about after leaving the Army.
It was
Marine Corps.
The Marine Corps.
The Marine Corps. Yes, he decided that he was going to do something wonderful about helping veterans with PTSD, and it actually happened by happenstance, and he's going to tell us how he decided to use gardening to help people with PTSD. And you also have your own nonprofit as well. So we're going to have you speak in the second segment. Thank you for taking the time. Where did you drive in from?
Thank you, ma'am. I drove in from Mount Dora, north of Lake County.
I think these guests win the award for traveling the furthest.
Well, actually, we had somebody come in from Miami once, the nurse, yes, Julie Griffin.
Yep.
But you know what it is? It's about all of us collectively using our voices for the common good. And I think when you wake up every day and you see the world as a place where it is a journey, and how can we use history, our life experiences, what we were taught at home, to understand different cultures, different races, different people, and where people are coming from. That's what life is all about. And that's why I like Andrew Darling, who is running for office. And I follow his Facebook page, and we have friends in common, and it's just awesome to know someone in your status that is doing so many good things. And I don't know how you do it. So we'll have you start our show today by telling us a little bit more about yourself, Mr. Andrew Darling.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm an Orange County native, right? I grew up in Orlando. I'm a Orange County Public School graduate. I graduated from Oak Ridge High School. I grew up near Orange Blossom Trail in Americana, but my roots start over here in Brevard. I was born in Titusville, and my family moved up to Minnesota. Then my mom brought my brother and me back down here to Florida when we were still young, still in elementary school, and finished through Orange County Public Schools. I had my daughter when I was 2 months after I turned 17, So I was a junior in high school and became a parent, which definitely changes your perspective in life.
A junior in high school.
A junior in high school. And my daughter was born. That same daughter I've had sole custody of for more than 10 years, and I will be taking her to college in less than 2 weeks down in West Palm.
Congratulations.
So it's my roots run deep in Central Florida.
Yeah.
And after I graduated high school, I joined the Army. Spent 7.5 years in the Army. I went to Iraq twice on two deployments. I ended up spending some time as a drill sergeant in South Carolina. And then in 2011, I ended up getting out of the military. My wife is still active duty in the Army. She is a master sergeant, which is an E-8. She can only be promoted one more time. So she is she's doing well in her life. And, you know, we have spent as much time. We've been married for more than 12 years. We also have a son together who's 9. We have, in our marriage, we've almost lived apart as much as we've lived together.
Maybe that's why it works so well.
You know, if you ask her that, I promise you that's what she will say. Yeah. But yeah. She finally got home. This is the first time we've been living together, and recently too, in the last couple of weeks. This is the first time we've been living together full time since 2016 when I went down to Miami to finish law school.
You're amazing.
So I spent a little bit of time at the public defender's office once I passed the bar exam. Because I was running for sheriff, they didn't even want the appearance of a conflict. So I had to leave the public defender's office. Halloween last year was my last day. And then in December, I decided, you know what? I'm going to open up my own firm. As long as I'm running for sheriff, I cannot ask another firm to hire me, train me, bring me into the fold. And then when I'm elected here in 22 more days, I would just leave.
Yeah.
Like, that's not fair to another firm.
Yeah, because you had dropped out of the race for a while.
So in January, I was looking at sort of the path to victory. And in January, I just started my law firm. And when you're doing so many different things, it's hard to do any one of them exceptionally. Like, you can do well at a bunch of different things, but if you really want to do an exceptional job, you really have to focus. So I had to focus on my law firm early on in the year. I still spend quite a bit of my time talking to my clients and you know, trying to come up with the strategies and whatnot that we need to do. The court closures have actually been beneficial.
Yes.
Because it's not a, you know, everyday full day sprint. So when I win August 18th, I'll have the opportunity to really wind down my practice, as there is a general election, but it's against two write-in candidates. And then you don't actually swear in until December.
Right.
So I'll have some time to make sure that all of my clients have, you know, adequate representation, even if that's not me going forward.
But how do you keep up, Andrew? Because I mean, you're running your firm.
Mm-hmm.
We all know I ran for office in 2018 for state rep, and I was working 4 days a week as a nurse. I had my show. And I had to wave signs, knock on doors, try to tell people the difference between those of us who want you to have a job, want you to have health care, want you to be able to afford a home. We understand your struggles and trials mm-hmm. and tribulations. It's very difficult. How are you doing that?
So for me, I've done some exceptional things in my life. And when I look back at it, I look and I'm like, you know, that was kind of crazy. But like, when you're going through it, you just do it. Like, you just, you wake up in the morning. If you have a schedule,
you're in that mode.
Yeah, you go.
Yeah.
My entire third year of law school, I lived in Orange County out in Winter Garden, and I drove to Miami, to the University of Miami School of Law, twice a week. Every week. Because my wife was in Afghanistan, and my kids, we needed our kids to be here in Central Florida so they could get into the schools that they were going to be in for my daughter until she graduated last year, and for my son so he can get situated in a school, you know, moving forward. And, you know, I did that for a full year, and I stayed on a buddy of mine's $89 pullout futon from IKEA. And, you know, listen, it was free, so beggars can't be choosers.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
And, you know, I don't make excuses. Like, when you make excuses, like, you don't, you're looking for a reason to fail. And the stuff that I'm trying to do, the things that I'm trying to bring to Orange County, especially at this point in time in our country, with the criminal justice reform movement and what we're doing now, we cannot fail.
Right. So what makes you feel like right now that you are the best candidate? Because you're running against an incumbent, somebody mm-hmm. who's been there for a while.
2 years.
2 years. And so tell our listeners why you think you're the best.
Because I'm the only outsider. I mean, right now, if we want to truly change from what we have right now, which is we have the community and then we have law enforcement, right? We need to have the community, and law enforcement needs to be part of the fabric of that community. If we're going to actually reimagine what it means to police people in this country, you cannot have that leadership and you cannot have that change by somebody who was hired into, promoted within, and has been part of the broken parts of our system for 30 years.
Yeah. You know what? What gets me is a lot of people register to vote for a political party based on what their grandparents did, what their parents did, what their friends do. But if you actually sit down and speak with people in a community and you say to them, do you have an affordable wage? Do you have a job? Do you have a job that you actually enjoy? Are you being treated respectfully? Do you have a home that you can afford? How are you doing with insurances? You will hear what the community has to say. So have you spoken with people in Orange County and said to them, what can we do to make it so that law enforcement officers are more in tune with you and your community? Have you done that?
Yeah, so I've spoken not only to the community, and I think this is one of the sort of important parts about my race, is I've also talked to deputies. Because right now, law enforcement is feeling as unloved as they have ever felt in this country. And part of it is a doubling down of tactics and techniques that haven't worked for the last 30 years, let alone the last 5 years. And we are moving to a different place with how we view police. The community has told me, and this is stuff that I know, I mean, just from where I grew up, where I went to school, the folks that I've had relationships with since I was a child, you know, I understand what it is to live in a community that gets over-policed. I understand what it is to get pulled over when there is no reasonable suspicion, there is no probable cause, just to try and fish and see what there is. And then to come back later and say, well, have law enforcement say, well, I don't know why the community doesn't trust us. I don't know. Well, I have the answer to that.
Right.
And if I'm
You've seen it. You've lived it.
Yeah, I've lived it. And I see it every day in my practice where you read a police report and it says, you know, person did X, Y, and Z. And then you get the body cam and you're like, person maybe did X. He didn't do Y. That's nowhere there. And Z, that's a complete fabrication.
The perception is so different, right?
Mm-hmm. It is. And
so you're saying that the relationship with the community has to be there.
It's the only way that you're going to ever bridge that gap is by having, and I don't mean like these, you know, occasional community barbecues where you get out there one day.
That's a photo op.
Yeah, which I do not like photo ops. Yeah. They're shallow. They are not indicative of what's really going on in the community. And I don't believe they actually build any bridges. I think the only thing that they do is show that if you really wanted to be a part of the community, you could, but you only do it once or twice a year.
Right. And that's something we have spoken about with so many people about. Why do people only show up in a community when they're running for office? Because year-round, there's public schools in disarray. Year-round, there are parents who have to work 2 and 3 jobs because they can't put food on the table. Year-round, there are people who are getting evicted because they couldn't afford rent. You know, and if you sit down and you speak with people, you will hear these things, right? So we all watch in horror what happened with George Floyd, right?
Yes.
And how would you police differently in Orange County when you become the sheriff, knowing what we know now about George Floyd and how he died?
Yeah, so use of force is such an interesting sort of phrase, right? It's like there's the assumption that you're going to use some sort of force, right? It's a use of force metrics. The part before that is, what is force? Why do we need force, right? So, I mean, we have two veterans here now where when we were in combat, if we were as loose and as flippant with a trigger, as a lot of law enforcement officers are in this country, we would still be in jail right now. The rules of engagement were very clear. And there were no exceptions. There are service members that are still in prison right now because they did not follow the rules of engagement.
Well, there are nurses who do wrong things and lose their license.
So
when we hear someone says, I can't breathe in nursing, what we do is we run with oxygen concentrator.
So for what specifically what happened with George Floyd, The problem was the individual who took his life was one of the training officers. So if you're a younger officer and you're in that scenario and you see the person who has trained you, the person who is supposed to know what the right thing is, doing the wrong thing, where do you feel you have the credibility to stand up and to stop him? And that's an incredibly important perspective here. I am going to revamp the entire training program, not just the tactics, techniques, and procedures, but I am going to revamp who our trainers actually are. Because
how do you unprogram those people that were in his class?
Yep.
From a guy that had
18 times, 18,
it was 18, yeah, 18 violations of.
So one of the bigger issues is when you have somebody who's been part of that culture of abuse. Like, there's a way to be in charge of a situation without being the loudest one there, without having to physically control somebody. I mean, I've done crowd control before. I know a lot of veterans that have done crowd control. You can use your body posture. You don't have to yell. You don't have to scream. You don't have to point a weapon at anybody. You can use your body posture along with your teammates, your coworkers, your battle buddies.
You can be a human.
You can have a conversation.
We had a friend that called in from Toronto,
mm-hmm.
who's a monk, and their police department in Toronto, they're using meditation.
Mm-hmm.
They're teaching them how to meditate to become better human beings, to de-escalate situations when you run into situations. And it is working.
Is when emotions are high, intelligence is super low. So you're not making good decisions if you're yelling or
behaving
improperly.
There's a direct correlation with use of force complaints to education levels of officers and deputies. So you can become an officer and a deputy with a high school diploma, which honestly, I think that's fine for the vast majority of stuff that you're going to do as an officer or deputy. But when you are in a high stress, high tense situation, and you don't have the value of those experiences, or worse yet, if you're responding to somebody who's in mental health crisis, if you're responding to somebody who is in withdrawal from addiction, you're probably not the best person to respond to that call. We should have, and I've made this commitment that before I hire 10 deputies, I'm going to hire 10 social workers, mental health professionals, and addiction specialists, because I want somebody, whenever we get a phone call that we need to respond to, if it's somebody in mental health crisis, I want somebody who is a trained professional to go out and handle that crisis. Absolutely, law enforcement is going to go with. Law enforcement needs to be there to keep the peace for safety purposes. But I want a trained professional who, that is what they do. I don't need that person to be along for a traffic stop, right? But when we have these high risk, you know, high concern instances that folks are reacting to, I want the best person there for the job. And sometimes it's just not a deputy.
Right, right. And we all know that because, you know, in our culture, when a person gets married, the elders in the family becomes the counselors.
Mm-hmm.
They offer guidance. They de-escalate situations because they have experience. They have knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know someone in the family who's pounding on his wife, or maybe the wife pounding on the husband, mm-hmm. there's domestic violence, there's verbal abuse, there's financial abuse, there's emotional abuse. You bring in one of the elders and say, hey, we need you to talk with this person. So you're talking about communication, someone mm-hmm. who could de-escalate a situation, and that's not necessarily being a police officer or a sheriff.
Exactly. And there's in Orange County, and I know out here in Brevard as well, like, we do have issues with domestic violence, and particularly since COVID.
44%, they said it went up.
Yeah, it's went up a lot. We absolutely must do whatever we can to protect victims. But there's some stuff that I've actually been reading up on recently from High Point, North Carolina, and there's another couple programs here where it's offender-focused domestic violence intervention. So it focuses on the actual offender and how to get them the skills, the tools to be capable of just making different and better decisions. We're ultimately doing what we have to do to protect the victim, right? That is the first goal. You have to get folks separated. If an arrest is necessary, you have to make that arrest. There's not a way around that. But we also need to make sure that we are preventing the future cycle of harm that continues a lot of times in these abusive relationships, because we cannot afford to continue to lose people in our society to domestic violence.
Or, you know, when someone is accosted for domestic violence, it affects the entire family.
It does.
It affects the children, the neighbors, the friends, everyone. So if you could rehabilitate and teach someone what to do the next time you get angry, or you're actually helping our community. Because we all see so many instances where institutions are so reactive instead of proactive, and you are more of a proactive guy.
Yeah, so one of the things that I believe is just a fundamental flaw in our system here in Florida is the purpose of sentencing, the purpose of jail, the purpose of prison is to punish. And I don't know too many people that disagree with that as part of the sentence, as part of the ramifications for a decision that you make. But more than 95% of people get out of jail or prison. We need to make sure that for whatever reason they went into jail or prison, that we are giving them tools, we are equipping them with tools so that when they come out, they're not the same person or worse
right
than when they went in. And we don't focus enough on rehabilitation. I mean, whether we talk about, you know, a lot of folks that are veterans, veterans have a higher than average incarceration rate in society because of mental health issues. Because there are things that you see in war that people just aren't supposed to see. And some folks are not able to deal with that. And that leads to all sorts of issues. So I know a lot of times people talk about, well, it's a mental health issue, it's a drug addiction issue. It can be either or both. So these scenarios are not simple. They're not clean cut. They're not easy.
Right.
But we have to look at it from finding somebody's humanity and figuring out people are still going to need to be punished for the wrongs that they do.
Yeah.
Right? That's nobody's arguing that. But we can do it in a better and a more humane way that does not dig people a hole deeper than what they've already dug for themselves.
Them.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
So why should Orange County voters fire Sheriff Mina?
So the sheriff's office in Orange County is on fire right now. The community doesn't trust the sheriff. Recently, the FOP, the Fraternal Order of Police Union, they withdrew their endorsement of Sheriff Mina.
I didn't know that.
So Sheriff Mina made some campaign promises in 2018 when he was elected as a non-party affiliated candidate after being a lifelong Republican. And he made promises that he simply didn't keep. He didn't raise the pay to make it competitive with other agencies in Central Florida. He also tried to sort of backdoor some stuff into training manuals and stuff that they agreed the union would have some say in. And with the morale right now, with Sheriff Mina taking a photo op with the chief of police in Orlando to take a knee with protesters, like on the other side of a barricade for a minute and a half, just long enough to get a good picture to put up on social media, law enforcement no longer supports him, which when you lose the trust of your deputies, it's really hard to do your job. But also when you've already lost the trust of the community and they cannot count on your leadership, it's time for a change. And I am that outsider that's going to come in and bridge the gap between law enforcement and the community.
And that's what we need nowadays. We're seeing all over the country where people are reaching out and asking for someone to come in and be part of who their team is, the community. Mm-hmm. And well, so voters have a choice between you, Sheriff Mina, and Joe Lopez, too.
Mm-hmm.
Why should they choose you over him?
So I like Joe. Joe and I have had a bunch of conversations. Joe Lopez is a cop's cop. He is a 30-year highway patrol veteran. He is part of the same establishment that Sheriff Mina is part of. I've linked him to being sort of, he's Sheriff Mina with a little more integrity.
What happens to politicians once they get into office?
Mm-hmm.
Is it really all about power and control? Or is it really about helping the people that elected you into office?
So
we see that all the time. Here in Brevard, we have a lot of career politicians who, for some reason, probably don't feel they should be filling out a job application to get another job anywhere else. They want to stay there, and they move up, they move south, they move east, west. we see them in different roles. They will, you know, constantly, but they're in some way where they were voted in.
So for me, I am not running for office for my advantage. I do benefit, right? I will become the sheriff. I will become much more influential in Central Florida. But I'm not running because of what it means for me. I'm running because what it means for the people in Orange County who have not had somebody in charge of law enforcement who's from the community and didn't also grow up in law enforcement. So for me, it is about the community. Like, I am in this fight not just to be the next sheriff. I am in this fight for the long term.
Right.
Central Florida is my home. This is where I grew up, and this is where my family is going to be for...
You care. I can tell. But, you know,
what you said earlier in the interview was about, like, using the right tool for the right job, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I've heard anybody else say that. And that's a very logical... Well,
because he speaks from his heart.
Yeah,
what you see is what you get. But, and the other thing is to, you know, we all hear about... People talking about marijuana. My kids always tease me because I say the Trinidadian way, marijuana legislation. And the young people are saying, well, you know, and I know for a fact, being in a nurse myself, people do use CBD. They say it works. How would you, what do you feel about that? What are your thoughts?
So the legislature is the one that makes the laws. Sheriffs just enforce the laws. But I will actively go to Tallahassee to advocate and lobby for the full legalization of marijuana. Our current sheriff is against the legalization of marijuana in just about any form. And I don't believe you can truly reform a criminal justice system if you're gonna keep the same tough on crime, war on drugs mentality that has been the mentality for 40 years now. Mm-hmm. And I know that with our current state attorney, over in Orange and Osceola, not prosecuting misdemeanor amounts of marijuana, it doesn't make sense for us to try to enforce it, especially when there is big business in the state of Florida that is moving hundreds and thousands of pounds of marijuana throughout the state to sell legally, and we still have folks who are particularly poor, particularly black and brown, who are being locked up for the very same thing.
Right. So, of course, we're all living in a time of COVID-19. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts where people have made wearing the mask so political? I mean, you're an attorney, you're dad first, you're a citizen. I mean, we were talking about this before you came on. I mean, it's just, we all want to be safe. We all know the economy is impacted by COVID-19. Mm-hmm. But where do we go from here?
So I think with the mask thing, I start with my attorney answer, right? Which is, I don't think it's lawful to require people to wear a mask. I don't. But I'm also concerned with, I don't know, other people. And if me wearing a mask, even though it may momentarily make me uncomfortable, it's better for other people. And that's fine. For how we move forward is we have to be willing to give of ourselves to other people without expecting something in return.
Right. Well, look at you guys in the military. You have to wear the mask, clothing in the hot sun, in the sand, in the desert. I'm a nurse. I have to wait 10 to 12 hours, and it is uncomfortable, but it's necessary, right?
I've never been hotter in my life than August in Kirkuk, Iraq, at a bus stop in full battle rattle, full gear, everything, and you look over at the temperature thing, and it stops at 120, and it's below that.
Well, I tell you, Ellen, I hope our friend Andrew Darling pulls this off. I know you can, because you speak from your heart. And we can see it. And people who are listening to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, I'm sure they can feel it as well.
Absolutely.
So again, give us your website.
Your website and way to get a hold of you.
And how to get a hold of you, because I know you need volunteers. And of course, you always need donations.
Absolutely.
And then I would like for you to keep in touch later on too. You never know, right?
Yeah. So you can go to my website. It's andrewdarling.com. You can sign up to volunteer there. You can donate up to $1,000. I mean, I know you can only donate $1,000. So, I mean, if you wanted to donate more, I apologize. But you can donate anything up to $1,000 here in the state of Florida. All of my social media is @ReformSheriff. So you can type it into Facebook. You can type it in Instagram or Twitter, @ReformSheriff. And I do Ask Me Anything just about every day now, where I'm live streaming. And if you want to get on there and comment something, ask a question, ask away. I'll answer it in real time. And I appreciate you guys having me here. I'm excited for it. And August 18th, Orange County.
Well, before you run away, Paul, I'm going to hold the ad for a quick second. Everybody has a 30-second elevator speech, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know you have one. So I just want you to tell our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, on 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and AM 1510. Your 30-second elevator speech before you take before you leave to go back to Orange County.
So my name's Andrew Darling, and I'm running for Orange County Sheriff because we have to fundamentally change the very foundation of the criminal justice system. The only way that we do that is with law enforcement, and the only way that we do that is with somebody who has not had a career in law enforcement. I am the only outsider. I am the only reform candidate. I am ready. I am qualified. I am capable, and I am so excited to be able to be the sheriff of the county I grew up in, the county where I graduated from high school, and the county where I grew up in, and the county where I came back to call home. I'm so excited. I'm ready. August 18th, vote Andrew Darling for Orange County Sheriff.
Leadership.
Excellent. We're going to listen to a couple of sponsors, and then we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9. Mattress and Furniture. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County. Contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. What an awesome first segment we had with my friend, Andrew Darling, who is an attorney and he's running for sheriff here in Orange County, Florida. And you know, Ellen, Paul just made a really good point. It's possible for outsiders to run and win.
Absolutely.
Because this is what we do when we feel there's something wrong, that we can make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And he has such fantastic experience with the Army, and obviously being a district being part of the defense. He's a defense attorney.
Yes.
Criminal defense attorney.
Well, he has a lot of experience.
Extreme amount of experience. So it's wonderful that he was here and able to give us some insight about his campaign and about him running for office and so forth.
Right.
So.
And, you know, one of the things that I wanted our listeners to hear from us today, I was talking earlier about, you know, what's going on with COVID-19 in Brevard County, Florida. And a lot of people are saying that they're having issues with being tested and how long the tests are taking. And, you know, there's only three ways for us that we know of for people to prevent the spread of COVID-19, which is wear your mask,
right,
good hand washing, and socially distancing yourselves. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends that you and I have not, I don't like to use the word enforce, but we give out valuable information on our show so that people can make well-informed decisions about whether they want to open a business, whether they want to run for office, whether they want to talk about a nonprofit, whatever it is they're doing. And people had an issue last week with mask wearing. And you know what? It's not our job to police people. We just give out the valuable information.
That's right.
You know? And so today we also have on our show, as you know, Mr. Sebastian
Lajeunesse.
Yes. What a lovely name.
Thank you.
And Sebastian is actually a good friend of the family, and he is here to speak about his nonprofit. So why don't you start up, instead of me reading all this, Sebastian, number one, thank you for coming all the way from Mount Dora. I know it's beautiful.
Thank you
there.
So much for having me. Yes, it is a nice, pretty country town, and yeah, it's a beautiful area, and yeah, it's a beautiful country.
So you were also, I mean, I'm sure when Andrew Darling was speaking about being in Afghanistan, you understand that as well. You were there.
Yes, ma'am.
And so you thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Both
appreciate
of you.
It.
So when you lead us through what happened, how did you end up signing up for the Marines? And
okay.
Then you left and now you're doing your nonprofit.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Sebastian Lajeunesse.
Hello, y'all. So my name is Sebastian Lajeunesse, and also my last name is actually French for the youth, by the way. So
interesting.
Yeah. So I was born in Montreal. My dad's French Canadian and my mom's Colombian, so I'm a bit of a mutt. Back in 1991, when I was about 3 years old, my dad, with a dollar and a dream, he moved us down here to Florida and started his own company. And I grew up in Sanford, Lake Mary. I went to high school at Lyman High School, and I did my elementary and middle school at Annunciation Catholic Academy. And after graduation, I did a year of college back when Seminole State was still called Seminole Community College. So now I feel a little bit old now.
Yeah, yeah.
Back in 2007, 2008.
So all the branches in the military, you choose the Marine Corps Infantry. Why the Marines?
Yes,
the Marines are the big, brave Marines.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, just since I was a kid, I just remember just being a little kid and just being in the car with my dad and, you know, like the conversation where you're like, oh, I want to be an Army guy when I grew up, because I didn't know about the branches. I just knew Army guy.
Yeah,
I
was
like,
yeah, everybody had those little
6 years
Army
old.
Men. Yeah,
exactly. And then my dad stopped and said, if I could be anything, I'd be a Marine. And then I asked, what's a Marine? And then he said, they are the best of the best. They are the toughest ones. They have the best training. They are the first ones to fight.
The other armed forces, people would disagree with that, right? There's always a fight between that, isn't
they
there?
They could try to disagree, but they know that they would lose.
So where did you serve? Like, what countries have you been to?
Both times to Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And I joined just because my whole life I've just been so grateful for this great country that it gave my family the best opportunities for us. That's why my dad moved us down here. He couldn't afford to feed his family up in Canada because half his paycheck was getting taken away in taxes. So then he was like, well, I can't do anything here. So then so he decided to move down here and start his own company.
Well, you know, it's all about that health insurance.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyways,
and then you wait a whole year just to be seen by a doctor and stuff.
Right.
And then.
So it sounds like you followed in your dad's footsteps of deciding on a company and deciding on how you were going to change things and change the world.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. I was in my freshman year of college. I was in my second semester of math class. I've always wanted to do the Marines, but to please my parents, you know, being from an immigrant family, they very much stressed me going to college, and I did the college thing, and I was in the middle of my math class, and I was not doing well. Let's just put it that way. And then finally, I just said to myself, what am I doing here? I don't want to be here. I want to be serving my country and saying thank you to this great country for taking care of my family. And so in the middle of class, I walked out. I went straight to the Marine Corps recruiter's office and said, sign me up infantry.
Yeah. You know, that, I think that's one of the things that us immigrants all share. We're so grateful to the United States.
Yes, ma'am.
And we want to give back. I mean, that's why it's hard for me to quit working, although I'm in a position where I could, but I enjoy giving back. I enjoy nursing. I have this show where we give out, you know, we have a beautiful community radio show here. And I think you're right. You hit it on the head. A lot of people don't understand when they complain about the United States that it's still one of the greatest, well, yes, I say the greatest country on earth. And a lot of people correct me and say, oh, don't say that because of blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But then I say, but you don't understand. You haven't lived. How old were you when you came to the U.S.?
I was 3, but I grew up going to Colombia and Canada all the time.
Right, so you've seen.
Yeah. Exactly. So I've seen
real corruption. So you fly the flag
corruption.
And you fly it high. Because
yes,
it
ma'am.
Is. It's a great country.
Yes, ma'am.
And thank you, Lord, for these opportunities that we've had in the United States. And like your dad, I certainly understand that.
Yes, ma'am.
So when did you get out of the Marine Corps?
I got out in 2015 after 7 years in 2 combat deployments and about... And also, in between, I served a few years as a primary marksmanship instructor where I trained all the recruits going through boot camp how to fire the M16, and that was a lot of fun. And they gave me medical retirement due to injuries sustained in combat. And so I came back home in 2015, and I immediately went to working for a food distribution company as a food sales rep, and it was a good job, and I loved the company that I worked for. I loved the people that I worked with. It just wasn't for me, and I found myself struggling really bad adapting to the civilian world, just dealing with all the PTSD from Afghanistan, and I was lost. I didn't know what to do anymore, because my whole life since I was a little kid, all I wanted to do was just be a Marine, and I couldn't do that anymore. And so my dad called me up and said, hey, come work for me part-time. And
at his farm.
Go to school and use a job. Yes, ma'am. So my father owns a company called Agro Research. And what they do is they make all organic, all natural insecticides, pesticides, and fertilizers for the agriculture industry. And so what he had me do was just work in his little test farm that was about like an acre.
And he wants to keep you busy because he knows you were getting depressed, you were having anxieties, and the demons were there.
Exactly.
And that's nice that your dad had a place of refuge like that where you could work and give back.
Exactly.
A lot of people don't have that.
Exactly. Yes, ma'am. And so what he would have me do is that he would have me grow tomatoes, strawberries, corn, you know, all these different crops and plants, and then he would have me apply his products on them just to test and see, okay, so what's the best ratio, or so what works better. And it was while doing that, I discovered and found love with horticulture therapy. It was as if time just stood still and I was calm for the first time in so many years. And it was just all the troubles and all the horror memories from Afghanistan just went away, and I was happy. I was seeing life that I was creating with my hands by just planting a seed and just watching it sprout into
a
sunflower.
And you probably said, well, gee, I'm going to share this with other people. And so then you took it from there, and St. John's Hops came around.
Yes, ma'am. And so St. John's Hops actually started by accident, because one of the plants that I decided to test my dad's products on were hops plants, because I figured, hey.
Yeah, I didn't even know all this, you know, Ellen. I learned about hops and beer making and all that from his website. I'm like, what?
Yeah, thank you. And so, because I had read an article about 3 years ago about how the craft brew industry is on the rise. I mean, for example, just on my way here today, I passed by 2 breweries just right down the street. So it's on the rise. It's here to stay. And so I figured, well, so with the rise of the craft brew industry, there's going to be a rise of the need for hops. So I figured if I could prove that if my dad's organic products worked well on hops plants, well, he could sell his products up north where they grow and belong. And so not only did his products work well, but the hops grew well here in Florida, which is unheard of, because hops aren't supposed to grow here in Florida. They grow up north in the Pacific Northwest and Michigan. And so at the same time, my father read an article about how the University of Florida
has been test growing hops in the state as well to see if that was a viable cash crop, because unfortunately the citrus industry is dying because of the diseases and viruses are spreading all over the orange trees, and then everyone from up north moving down here and retiring here and then taking up all of the land that was once a nice big citrus grove. I apologize for my stutter. I came back from Afghanistan with the stutter.
You know what? You're just a wonderful human being trying to do your bit on the planet. So you're helping our veterans, which is great.
Yeah,
that's right.
Thank you. Yeah, I just can't help but still be a little bit embarrassed about it.
Don't be.
You're great.
So thanks. And so my dad has sent me down to a conference held by the University of Florida. Where they're doing a seminar on to a bunch of the local growers to show them how you can grow hops here in Florida and say, hey, there's money to be had here. So he sent me down there to show his products, and I did. But then I came back with the knowledge of how to do it commercially. And so last year we started with just a small field with about 50 hops plants to see if that's something that we can actually grow and sell successfully. And we did two successful collaborations with American Icon Brewery down in Vero and Hourglass Brewery in Longwood.
So how do you harvest the crop?
They are big, long vines. Uh-huh. They grow about up to 20 feet and even 30 feet sometimes. And just one big vine, and then the flower, it's actually a green cone. That's the hop itself. And inside the hop is this yellow powder. It's called the lupulin, and it smells like heaven. I mean,
so that's
it
what's
smells
in
very sweet.
So that's what's in beer?
Yes, ma'am.
All this. And so, I mean, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Because I don't really drink beer, so for me to learn about it, it's great.
I don't drink it either, but
we're learning. Right. We have a lot of friends. Yeah.
Right.
I know my Talbot drinks Corona and Scotty.
Yeah, and it's really cool because there's several different hops varieties. So, for example, there's Comet, which gives off a tropical fruit, grapefruit flavor. And then there's another one that's Chinook, which gives off a pine flavor. And so it's really cool. So then these brewmasters get to have so much fun, and they get to create all these different unique beers with a separate kind of taste.
And names, too.
Yes,
you know,
ma'am.
Some of the names are really, really cool.
Right.
Yes,
and so you could see why this would help someone with PTSD who is struggling, because they're seeing a different side of just life.
Exactly. Exactly. But then on top of that, the brewmasters are also willing to pay top dollar for these craft specialty hops. So then I figured, hey, I love what I'm doing. This is helping me out with my PTSD issues. But on top of that, I've lost so many brothers, if not while in Afghanistan, but returning home from Afghanistan because they lost the war at home because of PTSD. And I wanted to do something to stop it. And God bless the VA. You know, they try, but it's just there's just so many veterans that need help that they can't keep up with all the veterans, unfortunately. And so a lot of the veterans get left behind, so to speak, unfortunately. And so I wanted to create a different outlet for the veterans to go to get help. And so I saw that there was money to be had growing and selling hops, so I figured I'll start, I will expand. And so we expanded to about 2 acres worth. We bought a 15-acre abandoned orange grove last fall. And so we cleared out 2 to 3 acres worth to start up. It's up in Umatilla, a small farm town in Lake County, just north of Eustis and just south of Ocala.
So you're doing what Ellen taught all of us to do, take your passion and turn it into profit while having fun.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, and horticulture therapy, and you know, not to get into too much of the science of it, but working with your hands, anything working with your hands, when you talk about PTSD or any kind of emotional things, it's using a different part of your brain, which is why, like, sign language works for kids with autism.
Which is why retired people...
Okay. It just uses a different part of your brain, so you do get to relax.
Well, you know,
turn things down on that other... piece. So that's huge for you and huge for all the people that you're helping.
Yeah,
right. But you notice how many retirees go into gardening and horticulture.
That's right.
Because it's good for them.
Absolutely.
Psychologically, it helps them to cope.
It's rebirthing of things.
Oh, yeah.
Look at my pepper plant. I talk about it all the time.
Oh, okay.
So lead us. I mean, we have about 10 minutes. maybe eight minutes. So lead us into a day at the farm. What do you guys do at the farm?
Okay, so first things first, my veterans, I have three. One being an Iraq veteran, and then one actually being a Vietnam-era veteran, which he was denied work by Target and Walmart because of his, quote, old age. And then when I met him, I said, do you want to work? He said, yes, that's what I hear. I said, do you mind working in the sun? He's absolutely not. I said, you are hired. And he keeps up with the rest of us. He loves it. He's happy, as well as all my other vets as well, too. And so the first thing they do is they take care of their chickens. We have a bunch of chickens there. And so that's another form of therapy for them as well, too, where they get to pet them, feed them, and just nurture them. But also, it's a way for them to bring home every day fresh organic eggs from work, so that way they can save money on, you know, on some groceries, as well as they each get their own row to grow peppers, tomatoes, corn, black-eyed peas, okra, for them to save money on groceries and bring back home from work. And then after taking care of their separate individual gardens and their chickens, well, then we just go, we'll pull some weeds, we'll spray the organic products from my dad's company onto the hops, we'll train the vines up the rope, and we'll just hang out and exchange jokes, just have some fun.
Play your mind.
Yes.
And your website. Give us your website. I think it's wonderful what you're doing. You had a vision.
Yes,
you found something that works, and you're giving back to the veterans and the community.
Yes, ma'am.
Right? So give us the website so if somebody wants to go on and look.
Yes, it is Saint, S-A-I-N-T, Johns, J-O-H-N-S, hops.com.
And are you partnering up with any companies that would like to buy the hops to make their beer?
Actually, this past week, we actually just did a huge harvest for Crooked Can Brewing in Winter Garden. They brewed it last week, so give it about a month, and then they will do a release for it. It's going to be called the Dirty Grunt, American Pale Ale. And also, I started a nonprofit, which I finally was approved with the 501c3 for. It's called Warriors to Farmers. And so with that program, because I felt so blessed that not only did my dad give me a part-time job to work at a peaceful farm, but also time to go to school, my sister is a licensed therapist, and I wanted to share that opportunity and blessing with other struggling veterans as well. So with Warriors to Farmers, all the donations that we get is going to go towards the salaries to have more combat vets who suffer from PTSD, for them to work for good pay for part-time work at the farm with St. John's Hops. And the reason why they're only part-time is because in the program they will be required to go to school, use their GI Bill, study for a future career, where they also get a monthly income from the GI Bill, but also they will receive free mental health counseling from my sister, who's a licensed therapist.
Yeah, so your whole family's involved in giving back.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, and what I like about you, too, what you're doing is you're not judging anybody. You don't really care who is Republican, who is Democrat, whatever it is. There are people who served.
Exactly.
And people come back messed up.
Yes, exactly.
And sometimes I do feel, Ellen, that maybe the people who vote for the wars should send some of their children and grandchildren to see what happens. Because if they see what happens when people come back without a leg, an arm, some people end up divorced, they end up depressed, they end up with PTSD, whatever it is. Maybe we can have policy for wars that are necessary, not unnecessary. Because, you know, it speaks to the bigger picture of humanity and why people go to war, and
yes,
who benefits from wars and reconstruction of countries and things like that.
You know,
ma'am. It's something that as Americans and paying taxes, we need to ask questions about too.
Yes, ma'am.
Because look at you, what you came back, a young man, 30 something years old, that has demons in your head from what you saw.
Yeah, and then it doesn't help when a random person just calls you a baby killer and tells you that she fought for oil and whatnot. I'm like, well, there's no oil in Afghanistan, but thank you for that. And as for the baby killer part, we were actually protecting the kids from the Taliban, who would actually attack them and try to kidnap them and whatnot.
Right.
And
well, Americans.
Back to that whole media thing.
Yeah.
Right, we were talking about.
Well, you know what? Americans do a lot of good all over the world. All over the world. And yes, you're right. We should thank our veterans for what they're doing. You don't make the policy. You just follow the orders.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when you're there, So tell us a little bit about Afghanistan. What are some of the good things you saw there with the children? I know you love children.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I have two beautiful little girls myself. They are 7, and then the youngest one turns 4 in a couple weeks. And I tell you, the older one, she takes after her mama. She is so smart. She's 7 years old and plays cello and reads music. Like, she plays all the classical music. It's so great. I say all the time that there's no way that my daughters come for me, because they are way too pretty and way too smart to come for me.
Well, hopefully they'll get your business sense. Oh, yeah, and you're providing for the community.
Thank you. But one cool thing about Afghanistan was just outside of our outpost, there was it was an ancient fortress built by Alexander the Great himself, and it was beautiful but almost eerie in a way to see it every day and walk past it, because it was a constant reminder of why this place is called the Graveyard of Empires, and then the fact that we were there as well too.
History is beautiful.
Yeah,
it can be. And also in Afghanistan, there were the Buddha statues that they blew up. And that broke my heart I just visited that Buddhist temple
in
Mims.
That was very sad, yeah.
Yeah, and so I remember. But, you know, unfortunately, it's sad what happens in these countries. But people look to America for leadership. They look to us as a sign of hope. And trust me, when you meet people from Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, my husband is from Iran, they do thank Americans. So we thank you, too, for what you did.
Yeah, thank you.
What about the being uncomfortable? Like, people are saying they don't want to wear a mask for 15, 20 minutes to go into Walmart and pick up groceries. You had to wear some pretty terrible gear, tough gear, as a Marine.
Yeah. It was about 140 degrees in Afghanistan, and it's hot. You've been walking around for a good 6-8 hours in the desert, and then before that, you were standing posts for a good 5-8 hours as well. And then, you know, when you come back from patrol, you're going to go back on post for another 5-8 hours again with no sleep. And and that's not including the 60 something pounds worth of combat gear on that you're carrying. But it is what it is. To those who don't enjoy wearing the masks, I get it. I know. But look, there's a virus going on. I know, just it is what it is. And
so let's go back to beer just for a minute, because we only got a minute left. We want to make sure that we get you website in.
Yes,
what about people who are making beer in their bathtubs?
Oh, yeah.
Are they? Can
y'all
they call
have
you?
Fun. Yeah. Yeah. So go and check us out on our website, because on top of selling to the big brewers, we also want to sell to the local homebrewers as well. So check us out on our website or on our Facebook page. And we would love to supply y'all with some good, sustainably grown hops.
Right here in Central Florida, by a veteran. And make sure that you check out the website. It's St. John's Hops, and that's SaintJohnshops.
We thank Sebastian.
Thank you so much for being here and sharing your story
with us. Thank you so much, y'all,
for having me. And
Andrew Darling.
And Talbot. I'm so glad Talbot got our families all hooked up here.
Oh, of course.
I want to meet your mother. I bet she cooks some good Colombian food.
So, folks, thanks for joining us here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Join us next week and every Monday here at 1 o'clock on WWW 1510 WWBC.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC. You're listening to WWBC, COCO, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234.